All right, our agenda is here. Apologies for the late agenda. I do not have internet access at home, and I forgot to send the agenda out yesterday. Same agenda, more or less, as last week. We need to talk about the draft charter updates, use case updates, if we're going to be handing out a card at the AC meeting. And we basically need to approve that we are good to go on circulating this document, these set of documents informally for review and feedback among all of the stakeholders that have said they're interested in this kind of stuff. So that's what's on the agenda today. On the last item in the agenda, we do need to make a decision on some names, like for issuer, curator, inspector, consumer, things like that, because we're starting to put together documentation that's going to be circulated more widely, and it would be good if we had that terminology in place. So the end of the call is going to be a bike shedding exercise. Anything else that we need to add to the agenda? Anything else we need to discuss today? All right. If not, let's go ahead and get started. First up on the agenda is the draft charter proposal. The link to that is here. And whoever's typing, we can hear you typing loudly. So if you could mute, please, that'd be awesome. Draft charter proposal is there. We have had a really healthy amount of review, so thank you very much to everyone that did a review. We still have review comments kind of streaming in. The hope is to keep updating the editor's draft, but we need to pull the trigger on sending this stuff out for review. So I'm going to try to do as much updates as possible before 3 p.m. today, and then send the document out for informal review to the advisory committee, to the AC forum at W3C, all the interviewees the people that filled out the survey. We've got their email addresses as well. I know that there is a long thread on some of the charter, and there's some fairly deep questions that one of the Web Payments IG members raised on ethics surrounding verifiable claims in anonymity and pseudo-anonymity. Does anyone else have kind of conversations or comments we should be tracking and integrating into the draft charter proposal as soon as possible? Like I said, I'm going to try to go through the mailing list and integrate as much as possible, but some of these discussions are really hard to boil down to a simple language that we can put in the charter. So typically, the more that's written, the much harder it is for the editors to figure out what people are trying to say and get it into the charter in a way that makes the commenter happy. So anyway, general question to the group. How do people feel about the draft charter proposal? Do you feel like it's ready to start circulating for informal review? And are there any discussions we're missing that we should take into account? Yeah, and Shane, it's changed. It hasn't changed that much in a week, but it's a good chunk of it's changed. Okay, we're seeing a couple of people saying they're fine with sending out for informal review.
I think it's good to circulate now, much better than it was last week.
Okay. To be clear, let me be a bit more clear about what has changed in the last week. And Dave says he'd like some of the comments that have come in to be added. Looking at the charter here, here's the link. I'm going to go down from the top. the problem statement has not been changed that much. Any change has been editorial. Matt Stone had asked us to try and tie the problem statement to the goals, and that has been done. So the goal section, section two, has been rewritten considerably. It's, you know, it's been really, really moved around. And basically what we do in the goal section now is take each bullet from the problem statement, and we say this is a goal, you know, this is what we're trying to address in the problem statement. So each goal that's listed in the goal section is effectively talking about solving one of the bulleted items in the problem statement. There is still language that Stephen Rowat has requested to be changed in the problem statement, along with Tim Holborn, that we need to go through and change the problem statement, ensuring that we don't also make the people that have already signed off on the problem statement upset. So there's only so much we can change in the problem statement before we get into substantive changes, and when we get into substantive changes, if we make those changes, the greater the chance that the people that have already signed off on the problem statement will come back and say, wait, I never said that I was okay with this particular wording of the problem statement. So we have to be careful about that. The goal section is, we have a pretty good free rein to kind of modify that as we see fit. And so, you know, goals and problem statement are tied very closely together now, in that there's a progression from one to the other. And then the scope and the deliverables are also kind of follow the goals. So in order to achieve these goals, these are the deliverables that we believe we need, at least in the first stage. Go down and check. Security and privacy consideration section has been updated to flow a bit better. Section 3.3, there's a new section on internationalization and accessibility because we had completely missed putting that in there. So we've put that a section about that in there now. In Section 4, deliverables, specifically Section 4.1, we said previously we had said we're only delivering data model, but now we're saying data model and core vocabularies. So, you know, there is a core vocabulary that we're going to have to develop that says, you know, how you express a set of claims. And I'm scrolling down. Not much has changed from there down to the bottom other than some editorial changes.
Hey, Manu.
So, yeah. Uh-huh.
Colleen is sitting here with me today, and she pointed out that in Section 5, the other W3C groups, those URLs or those links aren't, they all go 404.
Three of them do. Right. I can send you the three that do.
Okay. Don't worry about sending it. We will go in and fix that, and thank you for catching that. Yep, we'll go in and fix that.
Go validate those.
And then groups outside W3C, I think we're missing Credentials Transparency Initiative, and we may want to, folks might want to put a better eye on Section 5.3, because we will need to coordinate with folks outside, like IMS Global and Credentials Transparency Initiative and folks like that. Sorry, I cut someone off.
That was Tim. What is there's a valid process around making modifications to these documents once they've been signed off for circulation, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just send comments into the mailing list and we'll make the changes as long as they don't conflict with other changes or other input. So simple email.
Is that subject to like a group vote?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
If, for example, there was something that may have opinions, can we take it to a vote within the community group and then take the outcome of that vote around any amendments forward, or is it more just informal?
So the charter is now under the control of the Web Payments Interest Group. That's where the charter is being worked on. So any vote would have to be done via the Web Payments IG. But I think the weight of the Verifiable Claims Task Force, which is what this call is, if we got together and said, you know, we have consensus around changing X to Y, then I think that would carry a lot of weight, right? Because that's how we've gotten to where we are to date, is the Verifiable Claims Task Force has said, we need to do X or we need to do Y, and we've had people in this group, you know, plus one various proposals. So it's
or that we need to add Z.
Sorry, I didn't catch that last bit, Tim.
I said, or that we need to make an addition to the document. So, for example, add Z. If we might agree on X and Y, but we need to add something else. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's right now we're headed into informal review, broad community informal review, which means that, you know, anyone can make a comment against the spec, against the charter, and we will integrate those comments in if it's aligned with consensus in the group. And then the next stage after this is formal review by W3C membership, at which point, you know, a member might say, we would formally object to this charter if it has this wording, X, Y, and Z, and then we need to figure out as a community what we're going to do about that potentially formal objection. But typically the staff contacts deal with it at that point. W3C staff deals with it at that point.
I guess one of my concerns is that in the early days of the Credentials Community Group, we worked on trying to figure out concepts around privacy and data rights. Mm-hmm. So that is how someone might be able to use a credential to limit the distribution or the use or the reuse of either the credential or associated data. And then in that example, we then looked at ODRL for memory, which has now been updated to version 2. However, we failed to put that in the document to begin with. I think that we might be adding that one, but that is one example. That is one example of something that may have fallen through. But, I mean, my concern is that this is one example of something that may have fallen through the gaps within a very short window. And I wouldn't want that timeline to unnecessarily drop things out that may be as important as some of the privacy considerations that were done early on.
So agreed. We do have section 3.2, which is a security and privacy consideration section. And we try and succinctly summarize the discussions that we've had in this group. So if the text there doesn't work for you or anyone else in the group, you know, please suggest changes or additions, specific wording changes or additions that would address your concern. So that's secure and privacy. The ODRL stuff was left out unintentionally, so we do need to add that back into, you know, other W3C groups, the other W3C group section.
Yep, I understand. I don't think it's intentional whatsoever. I just think that it's been a big week, or a big few weeks.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Agreed. Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I was just going to say that we have sections on covering security and privacy, and we remembered to include that we're going to need to produce some core vocabularies that's plural. And so I think that just with those two things alone, we would be able to cover that in a working group. Those sorts of things. That doesn't mean we shouldn't call things out explicitly, but I think that we, you know, those things would be covered.
Yep. Our window for updating this document is still, I'd say end of May, right? That's when we expect to have all comments in and the document updated and all that kind of stuff. Clearly, we'd like to do it before then. And if the comments start dropping off by the end of April, we may just say, well, we're really not getting any new review comments in. Let's just go forward with what we have. So, Tim, you know, any concerns that you have, you still have 4 weeks to write into the group and say change this and change that. So this is, you know, nobody should feel that this is the last chance they get to update this charter document or the use cases.
Well, I've got great hopes for this work. So, I'll try and also make sure that my emails are a little bit more succinct.
Okay.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you. That would help. And as do we all have great hopes for this this work. Okay. Any other comments on the charter? Any things that are missing that are just really clearly need to be put in there? Okay. I think the next topic are the use cases, and then after we talk about use cases, we're going to ask the group if they're okay with circulating this for informal review with the broader community. So that's kind of where we're headed. Go ahead, David, before we move on.
Yeah, my one and only concern is that Eric Anderson is not here.
Yep.
And he has sent me an email saying he was going to be late. So
okay.
If we can figure out a way to incorporate whatever it is, which I don't understand and I can't channel. So
okay.
That's it. Otherwise,
okay. And,
I especially like the alignment of the problem statement with the goals. I realize this kind of spun off something that Ian said, but you guys took it. It's a very nice one-to-one. I like that a lot.
Okay, good. And Eric's comments, you know, we can take in, you know, over the next month. It's the only issue, of course, if he thinks that we're completely off base. And at that point, you know, if that's the case, we really can't correct for that.
Eric was participating in the email kind of back and forth last week when we were tinning up the goals to problem statement link.
Different Eric.
I don't
so
think
we're
he was.
Talking about, we're talking about Eric Anderson from Bloomberg,
oh,
not Eric
sorry.
Korb from Accredited Trust.
My mistake.
And so Eric Anderson may actually join before we close the call. So.
Okay. So, and we'll take his input in at that point. Use cases document. Shane, if you could give us a kind of an update on where we are with that.
sure. We got some feedback on the document, and it was all pretty, reasonable editorial stuff. We got a set of questions from Ian that I attempted to address. I have a URL to those questions because I do have something for the group that I'd like to follow up on. So this is a URL to his questions. My response is the next item in the thread. But if you go to that, if you want to, that's fine. So he pointed out some wording issues and some inconsistencies, and I think I addressed those. He also asked a question about kind of a fairly fundamental tenet of, I think, the requirements that we put forward in the use cases. And I wanted to touch on that here and see if I have the right understanding. So this comes back to privacy and pseudo-anonymity. And his basic question is, okay, here's the scenario that he commented on. June goes to her local beer and wine store to buy a bottle of wine. She submits her identity credential that lets the liquor store know that she is over 21 without having to reveal her actual date of birth, her address, or her state ID number. All right, so that's a fairly concise scenario that goes to the core of our pseudo-anonymity concept, right? I mean, I'm proving I'm old enough. You don't know anything about me.
Mm-hmm.
Ian's comment was, this seems very hard to guarantee generically. How do you plan to enable any claim to be transformed and still verifiable into a claim that aligns with what someone wants to know? Now, that's a fine question. and it's something this group's debated ad nauseum, I know. My response to Ian, and what I'd like some verification or affirmation from the group is, I don't think that is something that needs to be addressed in a use case document. We're stating requirements here. Implementation is something for future work, surely. However, to answer your question, attributes of a claim could be composable by having each attribute individually signed, for example, or there could be combinations of attributes that are grouped and signed as a collection. There are lots of ways to skin this particular cat. So I was sort of going to, I'm sure there's lots of ways to solve this problem. So my first question for the group is, am I correct in saying we want to be able to effectively only expose certain attributes of a claim based on user choice?
My response to that would be that a claim, the way that we've defined it, is a single statement. So it's more like exposing multiple particular claims from a credential. And I don't know if that's, as you said, there's multiple ways for us to solve this problem. We could create atomic credentials where there's one claim per credential, and that solves this problem. And then there are a number of different kinds of new forms of cryptography, not necessarily new, but there's something called CL signatures that allow you to expose just particular aspects of something that's been digitally signed that we could explore in a working group. So there are a number of different ways to explore solving this problem, and there are some very simple ones, which is atomic credentials, and there are some that are more complex. And either way, we can come up with technology for this requirement.
I think the answer is yes.
Okay, cool. The answer is yes.
Okay. Yes, we do want that requirement. Yes, the answer is yes. There are many ways of skinning that cat, and yeah, that's exactly right. So I think it's a mandatory requirement. I think that how it is done should comply with that requirement. I also think the ability to see how much you can restrict the reuse of any information provided is another aspect. So maybe that's about the validation of the date on it.
We do have a use case that goes to that end. That's sort of a separate example or a separate scenario, but yeah, I agree that that's a requirement too. I only want this particular claim to be useful for 30 days. I only want it to be useful by this target consumer, right? Whatever it is.
They are allowed to know that I'm in this building for the period of time that I'm in the building. And as soon as I'm not in the building anymore, they do not need to worry about it. If the building burns down, they know who's in the building.
Yeah. So, Tim, hold on. We've got people on the queue that have been on the queue. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, I was actually going to say that while we may indeed want requirements around transformability of claims, which to me is not the same as composability, I think that's separate from that particular use case. That particular use case, I never understood as assuming that you would take just the, you know, you would generate the over 21 from something else. I was assuming that a person would have actually gone through the process of getting a claim that verified that they were over 21, and that's the actual, verifiable claim that they have. That has a signature so that all they are providing is that particular piece of information. So I think it's important perhaps for us to distinguish between those and say this particular use case can be addressed with a claim that is specifically about being over a specific age. Now separately we may want to discuss transformability as we've been discussing, you know, the last few people have commented on.
Agreed.
Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, one thing I actually liked about that use case is that it was, I thought it was intentionally ambiguous. We certainly did not, I did not think that we implied that any sort of transformability was required. I thought we were simply saying the ability to provide an identity credential that asserts something, for example, like being over the age of 21, which people do today with like a driver's license, could be done without revealing any other information other than the fact, other than what is precisely necessary to comply with a certain regulation. And now that could be done by transforming a claim. It could be done with a set of atomic credentials that only specify that one piece of information. So I don't know that we necessarily want to change the use case to say, you know, we have to support, you know, both of those options. It's because I think the requirement is the use case. I don't think that we have a very strong requirement to do it in a particular way.
Go ahead, Shane.
Oh, thanks. I just didn't want to forget. I don't think we should be debating the details of the technology today. I mean, we have other things on the agenda, but yeah, it was intentionally ambiguous. And I most want to confirm the requirement. It sounds like it's a very strong yes. So I'm glad I understood, and I'm glad it came through in the use cases document. And the way I know it came through is because somebody reacted negatively to it. Okay. otherwise, I'm certainly open to additional changes to the document. Obviously, we're trying to keep it very tight. We're trying to make certain that we're supporting the financial, healthcare, and education verticals. So we have lots of, you know, each requirement has scenarios in those spaces, hopefully. I've tried to craft them and massage them. I mean, thanks to the editors for getting the data in there. I've sort of gone through and massaged them to make their style consistent. I got a nice additional use case or scenario from John Tibbetts, which I've inserted. Thank you, John. Somebody's asking what was the requirement at hand, the one we were discussing. That requirement was, yikes. Ironically, I don't have the requirements document open. Sorry. But I will find that for you while I'm talking here. But it's I think we're in a pretty good space here. But as I said, I'm certainly open to additional comments on this document. And the thing I want to start doing, I mean, this needs to be tight. It needs to support the draft charter. I want to start focusing on the other document, the extended use cases, the vision document, because that's the interesting one for the community group, I think. It's the big picture. This is the baby step that gets the, what do I want to call it? It's the thin end of the wedge, you know? Once we get it under the door or in the opening, we can start hammering and open it up wider to make sure that everything we want is addressed. But we certainly want to ensure that nothing that happens in this initial phase precludes the vision. So we really need to articulate that vision well. And I apologize, I was finding the use case here and I haven't done so. I got distracted.
Thank you, Shane. I've got one thing that I don't think that we've done yet with the use cases document is make sure that the use cases and scenarios that we have in the current document map back to the goals and the problem statement. Because if we don't have use cases that align with the goals and the problem statement, we're going to have issues down the road. So someone needs to do a review to make sure that we actually try and tie those things together now that the draft charter is a bit less drafty than it was last week. I would volunteer to do that. I'm afraid I'm completely out of time for this week. So if someone else has the time to do that, that would be great. If you can volunteer for that.
I feel like that's something you want done before 3 p.m. today.
Oh, no, we lost Shane. To answer Shane, yes, that would be great if it was done before 3 p.m. today, but it would be okay if we get it done at some point in the next week. The other thing I wanted to mention was that we're talking about a whole bunch of different cryptographic things, meaning we're talking about composability, we're talking about unlinkability, we're talking about pseudo-anonymity, we're talking about ethical considerations, we're talking about, rights around data. When you take all of these things, each one of these things is a completely different topic or fairly separate topic, and when you mash them all together, it becomes fantastically difficult to actually achieve it, technically achieve what we're trying to do. We've had these debates many times over the past several years that we've been doing this work. And what's becoming more and more apparent is that this pseudo-anonymity case or this unlinkability case is very much in the minority. As much as those that, you know, love privacy and data rights and all that kind of stuff, and I put myself firmly in that camp, as much as we want to make sure that that is there in the solution, there is a very, very small subset of data that we're talking about where you can actually accomplish unlinkability or actually accomplish untraceability or things of that nature. So it's fine.
Couldn't you just put the
Sorry?
Couldn't you just expire the key? Couldn't you just do a key expiry within a short window of time?
Sorry, say that again, Tim. I couldn't make out what you were saying. Expiry. Putting an expiry on it doesn't do anything. Someone, unless it's backed up by law, and the law says that when a credential expires, the consuming application has to throw it away, it's not a solution, right? It's not an actual technical solution that the thing just kind of disappears or the signature is invalid or, you know, anything of that nature. So these problems do not have simple solutions to them. In fact, they have, like, take for example, selective disclosure in a credential that has like three attributes. That has to do with the Kamenich-Lisinskaya signature schemes. And we've taken a look at that in depth, and even if we use that mechanism, there are other like unlinkability things that we just absolutely cannot achieve with Kamenich-Lisinskaya. So there, as Dave is saying in IRC, there are always trade-offs. Clearly, all of us want these things to be there, but we should also start, we should understand and be fairly realistic about what's achievable, right? So, for example, Tim, the data rights stuff are only really achievable when there's strong law and regulation in place, right? Because people can just ignore those mechanisms.
I don't want to hijack the conversation, but equally, I've done a fair bit of work in that area, and if, for example, you vendor the product that says, if you license this product and use it within these guidelines, it costs you X dollars. If you use it on a commercial basis to exploit user data, we will charge you $1 million. And users are able to express in their own circumstances what that breach of contract means for them also. That would then give legal apparatus. So there are boundaries which then require law, contract law or otherwise, to be able to play a role. However, fundamentally, it does need to be supported by technology.
Right.
There's a complementary nature there.
Right. Right. So I think what we're trying to do with the use cases is highlight that, the technology does have to support it, but the technology is not a solution in and of itself. Specifically talking about the data rights issue. If we're talking about unlinkability, that is a pure technology solution, right? If you do not have a pure technology solution for unlinkability, no amount of legal framework is going to prevent people from being tracked, right? So the unlinkability case, there is very little data on the planet that can be transmitted in an unlinkable way. The second you put any kind of personally identifiable information, or if you accidentally put it too much too many bits of information in the message, then all of a sudden the person's linkable. So I'm just raising this as, you know, we want to put these scenarios in the use cases and how we solve, you know, we want to put these scenarios that we want to solve these use cases in the use cases document, but we should stay away from trying to actually solve them today. Go ahead.
Well, this is true, but if we create one identity document that has everything in it, then it's a bigger problem than if you create a package, or I can't remember the words that we used previously, but you know, a single badged credential that says I'm over 21 that may be issued in addition, you know, in association to something else that has a proof of age claim. So I think there's an interaction between the design principles and also some of the education that's provided in the documentation to how these technologies can be used. Anyhow, I just think best efforts basis. I think that's what it comes down to.
Agree. I mean, I think we... Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that... I think we really need to let a working group take a look at this. Things like unlinkability become more and more difficult. You know, you can make something unlinkable, but every time you make something completely unlinkable, the party that is inspecting the credential starts to potentially lose value in it. So it becomes a lot easier for people to commit fraud and build technology tools that, even if you are using short expiration dates, or expiration periods, it becomes a lot easier for people to circumvent those measures. So I think we should put some use cases in there and then see what a working group can do to try and solve it.
The other one that seems important is portability. So, for example, if you had a credential from one bank and you moved your bank account to another bank, and say, for example, that URI structure didn't just service one type of credential, but perhaps others, then there needs to be some sort of update mechanism, I would imagine, which goes to the same unlinkability factor. I don't know. Anyway, there's some ideas.
Right. I think we have something that everything that we're doing is about, you know, portability. We are talking about portable verifiable claims. I did see your comment on updating the problem statement, but maybe we should put it in the goals, is to make sure that these verifiable claims are portable. And we actually do. So the second, if you look at the goal section, number two, the second goal, this is straight from the doc, the second goal is to ensure that users can move their verifiable claims from one service provider to another. Does that meet your portability goal, Tim?
I think what I was trying to be exact was vendor lock-in. So, I mean, one of the differences I'd imagine between Super Provider X and some of the other standards was that I can't take my Facebook login or my friends from Facebook, for example, and move them to Google. I'd have to go and sign up everyone else. Yeah. So given the linked data structures underneath it, there are URI issues, but then, yeah, I don't know. I just think making it very clear that portability is a critical part of it.
Yeah, I think we're crystal clear about that in the goal section, second goal.
Cool.
But if you don't think we are, I mean, you know, suggest some alternate text and we can update that. Dave, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly say, I do think we cover vendor lock-in in the problem statement, and then also we talk about the ability to move verifiable claims from one service provider to another. So I also feel like we've got that covered.
Shane.
I'm super glad you think it's covered there. It's not covered in the report in the use cases at all.
Yes. So we definitely need to put that in the use cases.
Nor was there any scenario in any of the stuff I looked through that referenced it. Now, that's okay. We can make up a scenario, right? But we don't have a requirement in this space. So we should throw one together in the next few hours. Good news, I have nothing else to do in the next few hours.
Yeah, so I think this goes back to ensuring that the goals, the use cases support the goals, meaning that we have use cases. Like, so this is good. We found a gap. We definitely need to fill this gap before we send it out to review.
And since use cases is still the topic that we're at on the agenda, if people want to look at Section 4, there are three subsections of Section 4, issuing, revoking, and consuming. In which of those buckets do you want me to throw a portability requirement? I don't think it's issuing.
So we had a section in the use cases document before that had to do with management, and I believe that's where we had it before, but it's been a long time since I looked at that document.
You're right that there was a management section, and I can go back and try to harvest from that.
How about international migrations?
I'm sorry, Tim, can you say that again?
International migration. So someone moves from one country to another and therefore needs credentials. Yeah.
Okay. So managing and sharing.
I'll think about it more.
Managing and sharing, I think, I like managing and sharing as the section. So I'll probably just call it managing for this document, and I'll grab some scenarios. Tim, if you have comments, do them on the list, please. All right. Thank you all.
Yep.
Okay. Nate also pointed out where the portability entry was in the old use cases document. It looks like that didn't make it over for some reason.
There was some pretty aggressive triage that went on.
Okay. Carla is saying if we're talking about data ownership, there should be a section that focuses on the credential owner. Carla, could you be a bit more clear on what do you mean by credential owner? Do you mean the holder? Do you mean the issuer of the credential or the subject of the credential? Holder, the holder. Holder. So Carla, without use cases and text to go off of, it's going to be hard for Shane to put something together in time. So if you could, volunteer to put something together and send an email, that would be super helpful. All right. Thanks, Carla. Okay, problem statement goals. All right, we've got around 14 minutes left in the call. We're going to attempt to make as many of these changes before we send out the request for informal review as possible, but we do have a deadline of 3 p.m. today that we're trying to hit. And at that point, we're going to send out what we have. Let me state that as a proposal. So the proposal is by 3 p.m. today, we're going to try to really get as much of this input into the document as possible, noting that we've been getting input in for 2 weeks now, and we have to draw the line somewhere and send this stuff out. So 3 p.m. today is the deadline for getting stuff into these documents. And at that point, we will contact the advisory committee, the interviewees, and the people that filled out the survey and tell them, hey, we're looking for informal review on these documents, and then go from there. So does anyone have any concerns about that proposal, about sending this out for informal review between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. today? Okay, so let's get let's get this down as a task force proposal. So integrate as much feedback as possible before 3 p.m. Before 3 p.m. today. And send the draft charter and the editor's draft charter and the verif and use cases out for informal review to the interviewees, the survey respondents, and the W3C advisory committee. So plus one if you support that proposal, or minus one if you disagree with that proposal. All right, going once, going twice. That is resolved. Great, awesome. So we will execute on that plan. Anything else on draft charter use cases before we move on? Okay. During the last meeting, we had asked if we should have a handout. David Ezell made the very good suggestion that why don't we just create a business card with a URL link on it, maybe a QR code, and something about, you know, please review the verifiable claims draft charter here. So it's basically a card that we can hand out. I looked into cost. It's $25 for 250, minimum amount that I can actually print out, which is fine. Does anyone have any other thoughts on this? I will take an action to make these cards by Friday and then give them, you know, give a stack to David Ezell and Shane at the AC meeting. Any thoughts on the card? Do it, don't do it.
I can do it.
All right. All right. We will do that. We'll put it together.
I would just say if it's not too expensive, it would be a good thing to have handy.
Yeah, it's $25, so.
All right.
Charlie says,
I'll buy you two beers at Mead Hall.
That sounds fantastic. And Shane, you know, we might as well. But Shane and I will work on it. And if anybody else wants to work on it, let us know in IRC, and we will rope you in on the discussion. And Shane, yes, I think we do want to hand them out at Libra Planet. Might as well. Never know. We might get a good hit and someone joining the work as a result of that. Okay, last topic. We've got 8 minutes, which is good because this is a bike shedding exercise. We had a discussion a while ago on terminology, updating the terminology that we're using. To date, it sounds like folks are pretty happy with issuer and holder. So the issuer is the organization or person that issues a verifiable claim or a credential. The holder is the one that's holding on to it. We have new language where people are talking about subject. Subject is the thing that the verifiable claim is about, the entity that the verifiable claim is about, or the credential is about. People seem to be okay with that. There are two things that we weren't sure about, which was the entity that stores credentials on behalf of the holder. We have started calling that the curator. Matt Stone is asking if the subject and the holder may be the same. Yes, absolutely. But the subject may be different than the holder. So there, we don't have a clear set of use cases around that, but I think logically it makes sense to most people. for where the credential is stored. We've been calling that, you know, we've called that the identity provider, which is confusing, thoroughly confusing to the OpenID community. We have somebody went off mute and you're kind of noisy. We have identity provider, which is really confusing to the OpenID community and the standard like SAML, you know, community. We have talked about vaults, but it's just not necessarily a vault. We have talked about curator, and curator seem to have the most amount of support, but I'm seeing minus ones in IRC for curator. We had talked about aggregator, but aggregator is that didn't get a lot of support for whatever reason. So there's this, you know, we currently use identity provider. curator is the thing that seemed to have the most amount of support, but you know, it's this is divisive, meaning that you know some people just really hate it. Okay, so let's put a pin in curator, and that we have to have that discussion. And then on the other thing that we need to talk about is the organization that consumes the credential. So we've been calling this the credential consumer, but people said that that's confusing because it sounds like the holder or, you know, something of that nature. So a suggestion to use inspector or acceptor was raised as well. So we had, you know, credential consumer or credential inspector or credential acceptor. Okay, so that's the other decision. So there are two vocabulary, you know, the terminology discussions we need to make a decision on, primarily because we're putting this language into the charter and into the use cases, and it's going to start becoming harder to change some of this language. So let's pick one of these. Let's talk about the vault slash claim store slash identity provider slash curator. Could folks in IRC just put a plus one for the one they want, and perhaps a minus one beside the things that they absolutely do not want? Like they would have a huge problem if we picked that language. So let's talk about
the choices that were
curator. Here are the choices. I'll type them in. Choices. Identity provider slash claim store slash vault slash credential. Actually, we didn't have vault credential. Let's see. curator. Okay, so those are the choices that seem to kind of be out there right now. Did I miss any choices?
Yes, I also put forward agent, like a credential agent or a claims agent. As your curator also can function as the agent that kind of hands your claims out and manages them for you. Manager is another one.
Okay, so they're the choices. So clearly nobody likes identity provider.
I know we're all typing here, but Matt said something that I'd like to just touch on audibly. You said Matt says, I like store over manager curate because the action seems more correct. If we're going to use verbs, then I agree. But The problem is store sounds like a place you buy things, and depending on who reads these documents, that may be confusing. So I'm thinking more storage than retail outlet. Me too, of course, but, you know, got to think of the audience.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pick through these to figure out where we have consensus here. And it looks like, you know, there are two positives for manager. No one really hates manager that much. Curator seems there are a number of plus ones, but there are a few minus ones as well.
Can we try to rule some of these out? I would really like to. Okay, good.
Vault, I think we've ruled out. I think agent, we've ruled out. Which leaves manager and curator.
I think curator is probably the best.
Does anyone else disagree? Does anyone think that it's not down to manager and curator?
Will you repeat that, Manny?
I think we've pretty much eliminated everything except for manager and curator. I think that's what the decision is between. So let's do a revote. So the choices are manager and curator. Those are the only two choices, so pick one. Awesome. We're split.
Do we alternate exactly?
Three, yeah, pretty much. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
The manager curator with a slash.
6 for manager.
Manator.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we've got one more for curator. One more for manager than curator, I think. 1, 2, 3.
Was Shane's
vote? I changed my vote. Sorry.
Okay, so we're split. Evenly, so we might as well do it.
I'm really sorry about that.
I don't think we should do the same synonym search at this point.
I don't think we voted on aggregator, which was also
I didn't see very much support for aggregator.
You know, the thing I like about curator is it's sort of inspires in me this image of valuable things that go into a museum where collections are curated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels sort of right. It's very kind of intuitively right on that regard for me. And manager seems so overused in our kind of colloquium today that, it's too overburdened with other meanings.
Yeah. Yeah, the uniqueness of curator is a desirable thing. Shane said curator could also have some intelligence, and I think that's the desire. That's one of the market differentiators that these things are going to have, these storage systems are going to have, is they're going to be able to tell you, hey, you have credential X, Y, and Z, and you might want to get credential Q because that's going to make you more employable.
I wasn't even thinking of that application. Interesting. And I meant that the term also implies kind of some intelligence. So, you know, museums have curators. You know, it's a smart person. It's an agent that's doing smart things for you. Yeah, it's not just a bucket we're throwing crap in. There's actually some, you know. So
curation is an active task. It's a, it is.
Exactly.
It's, not like storage.
It's a powerful word.
The box in the basement.
It's a powerful word.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, to answer your question in IRC, why is it not the issuer? The issuer is another entity. So an issuer issues a credential, and then the holder takes that credential, and they put it into the manager slash curator to store it. So the issuer, in this ecosystem, it's they're two different actors.
Okay, thank you.
Repository is a more passive term that is a kind of a secure holding space. Not bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm hearing a lot of people kind of defending curator. I'm not hearing a lot of people defending manager. So let's do a revote now that we've had a little bit of discussion and see where we are. So everyone
Manu?
Plus one. Yep, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but as an outsider, repository makes more sense. I mean, I know that doesn't mean anything, but just, you know, to me, repository sounds like somebody who holds these things, whereas curator sounds like somebody who displays them. I know that's not true, but so, for what it's
right.
worth.
Right. So, we didn't have repository in the initial go-around. I note that we're 5 past the hour. I feel like we're right on the edge of potentially choosing one of these things. Let me put the choices back in and see if we get something different out this time now that everyone has had a chance to think about it. I'll add the repository in as one of the choices. So manager, curator, repository. All right, so there's the choices again. Do a plus one, and actually do a minus one if you want to vote against one of those. So. So repository has 8 votes, 9 votes. Curator has 5 votes. Manager's been eliminated. Okay, well, I mean, the votes are clear that it's repository. How do people feel about that? That's where the votes are. Any pushback on repository? So Eric doesn't like it.
How would services that provide these things feel about these names? Does anyone have any opinions about that? Would they rather be called credential curators or credential repositories?
So let me put on my Digital Bazaar, you know, hat. We would not want to have a product that is a credential repository. We would want to have a product that's a credential curator because it provides some kind of intelligence there. We want smart products. We don't want just silos, you know, dumb silos. But again, that's a very opinionated with my business hat on.
Hey, Manu, this is Nate. I guess with my concentric sky hat on, we'd be fine with repository sort of as a generic term, but we would probably not brand our product as a repository. We would maybe put that in some descriptive and describe mm-hmm. the intelligent features we'd want to build on top of it as sort of the real selling point.
Okay. All right, so, you know, let's let's make the decision. So it's repository right now. That seems to be what the group, I mean, the vote's clear. And then we can come back and revisit this if people really have an issue with it. Okay, that's it for the call today. Thanks, everyone. Next week, we do not have a call, but we will meet the week after to talk about how the advisory committee meeting went. Okay, thanks. Bye.